Edie James, known the world over for her detective stories, is also the Baroness of Holland Park and our guest here on the Paula Gordon Show, Bill Russell.
There's a tendency to think that a writer sits down and with a pure front brain activity, rationally lays out who the characters are going to be and what the action is going to be and who's going to do what when, and that it has to be in a setting, and that then you put dialogue, and that the real trick is in laying out the bits and pieces.
That sounds very mechanical.
It sounds very mechanical, and I have a sense it's a little richer than that. There are other things going on.
Oh, yes, I think, Bill, but I think the other things are probably very mysterious even to the writer, frankly. I don't think one can, in fact, explain. Sometimes people say to me, how did you do that? Or how did you know that? How did that idea come to you? And what can I answer? I don't honestly know. Certainly part of it, I think, is conscious. You talk the front of the brain. I think part of it is conscious. But most of it is really coming mysteriously, I think, from one's creative imagination. And one doesn't really quite know how that operates. What happens in a book is that I do plot and plan in very great detail before I begin writing, and the original idea almost always comes from the setting, so that with the last book I would think I want to set it in a theological college, and I want that college to be set on the edge of the North Sea, and then I think about it, and you know, well, who am I going to kill, where, when, how, why, what are the clues going to be, how is Dalgliesh going to get there, how can I make him the officer in charge when it's outside the Metropolitan Police area? Well, the obvious answer to that is to have one of the suspects who is in the college at the time of the murder, who is a senior police of the local force, and obviously if he is a suspect, that force cannot investigate. So, you know,
very
you just
clever
overcome
you.
These ideas, and I have a notebook and I write down the ideas as they come, and some I reject and some I think are worth continuing with, and over the months this process of plotting and planning goes on. But how those ideas come, I mean, why I should have thought of that or thought of one thing other than another, I don't think one can explain. That must be creativity, presumably.
In a way, it feels like, as you describe it, being in a kitchen with all the tools and with all the ingredients, and then having prepared it all, you sort of enter a dreamlike state, or you turn it over to your muse.
I think some writers almost write like that. I don't myself, but I think there are some who do, who just decide the characters and put them in a situation and virtually let them take over. But it is mysterious, but it's other aspects of creativity are mysterious to me. I mean, I can remember visiting a musician, and in his study he'd got lots of this paper with staves over, you know, all these little black notes, and complicated white notes, black notes, staves, all these things. And I sort of said, well, you're just writing this down on paper. Are you hearing in your mind what it would be like when the orchestra's playing it? I mean, to someone who's not a musician, this seemed quite extraordinary. Or does he hear the sounds first and then put them down? And it's really
what was
like
his answer?
How do they do it? I mean, painting, I think we can understand more. I mean, I can't do it, but we can understand that more, can't we? You know, there's the canvas, here's the colours. But I mean, when you think of sculpture, I think it was the greatest was Michelangelo, who said when he saw the great bit of marble, inside there was the sculpture, and he was getting at it. But I think a lot of creativity is most mysterious.
Well, and you're in a unique position. Your time on the Board of Governors of the BBC, and at the same time, most, if not all, of your books have been made into television dramas. And that translation from the written word to the filmed or the television version of it, again, it's a different form of creativity.
Yes.
And at the same time, you've got the business, if you will, perspective from the BBC or anybody that's producing this, so you've got those kinds of pressures. You have the artistic differences that are the television producers, the directors, the actors, all of those, and then you as an author have this book, and I would think that each of those has a different perspective and a different set of needs and a different aesthetic sense.
Oh, absolutely. And of course, I as a writer have practically nothing to do with it at all. Absolutely nothing. I'm supposed to be consulted if there's a great change in the plot, but consultation is not approval, and I have really no control. Sometimes people say, do you mind what they've done to your novel. And of course I have to say that they haven't done anything to my novel. It's exactly the same novel, there's not a comma altered in it. They have taken the story and transferred it to a visual medium. And the result of that is a very different form of art. Sometimes you could use that word, sometimes I don't think it's fair. I'm not sure that that's fair. But, you know, they are experts in that medium and know, or are supposed to know, although I sometimes wonder, what works in it.
But there are a different set of I think, economic pressures. As a writer, in some ways you are much more independent than what happens in a movie environment, in a television environment, because it's expensive, because they are very dependent on the number of, I mean, the large number of people tuning into it, or at least they think they are. There are a lot. It's a much more corporate undertaking, both in terms of the number of people, but also from a business standpoint. And I would think that, you know, those pressures in some way would tend to diminish the quality of the final product, that the pressures are economic pressures rather than artistic pressures.
Oh, I agree with you, absolutely. And that's increasingly so. I mean, if we think of some of the old television series, I'm sure you did see Jewel in the Crown over here and Brideshead Revisited. They were often, you know, 8-13 parts. And a complex novel could be dealt with really very faithfully and very often with the same dialogue that was in the novel. Now, just with some writers, I haven't suffered anything as much as some others. You feel they have just bought a title or bought the name of a character and made something that bears very little relation to the work itself. And as you've said, television has become so expensive, drama particularly, that they really can't afford to spend as much time on a book as they should.
But you say of the BBC that there is an answer to this, that perhaps they should do less, better, rather than what has tended to be the experience in television of do more, less well.
Oh, well, I feel that very strongly, Paula. I really do. But the BBC has a real problem, you see, because we have a compulsory license fee, about £100 a year, and everyone pays that, rich or poor. We all pay the same. And if, in fact, only perhaps a third or less than a third of people are watching the BBC, and the others have got their what's this thing, not disc, whatever you call it, basins,
satellite dishes.
Their satellite dishes, and are watching the numerous channels they can get through satellite dishes, then they've got to say, well, why are you taking £100 a year off me? I can do without you. What I mostly want is the sports channel and the film channel. I'm not watching you. So the BBC, in a way, has some pressure to keep up the viewing numbers. And as soon as you have pressure to keep up the viewing numbers, then I'm afraid you do start reducing standard. In theory, of course, the BBC can say, no, you can have a very, very popular programme, which is still a very high standard. You can make, for example, comedy that is a very high standard and it will still be popular. But by and large, let's face it, with millions of people watching, you don't get huge viewing figures for the best, probably, or the most intellectual television. So I think this is the root of the problem.
In a sense, this goes to what we were talking about earlier, which is the role of government. I mean, the government has taken upon itself to impose this fee to support the BBC as opposed to the commercial networks. And the question is, should the government be doing that? And if so, for what reason? And is it to appeal to the most people, you know, which is a sort of democratic perspective, or is it to set a high standard?
It's a majoritarian perspective.
Well, it's a majoritarian as opposed to equality, and those are not necessarily the same.
Yes.
Hard questions.
I don't think anyone, well, it's silly to say people haven't thought this through. I mean, they are thinking through. There's a school which say, yes, well, let people pay for the BBC. You know, take away the license fee, and those who want the BBC can pay for the BBC. There are others who say, they hardly dare say it, but they do, well, surely the BBC should take advertising. Mm-hmm. I mean, the great, great virtue of the BBC has been no advertising. Mm-hmm. I must say, I think in this country, you are extraordinarily, Well, I don't know how you put up with it. I'm amazed that you don't all revolt.
The advertising.
Because at least when we have ITV, the amount of advertising is very controlled, and it doesn't much interfere with the programme. It does to a certain extent, but not very much. You have a lot of programme and then very short time of advertising. But here you hardly get sucked into a programme. It seems to be every 3 minutes. And I don't know how the American people put up with this. I really don't, because it spoils so many good programmes. So really, when people say, well, surely the BBC should take advertising, there's a feeling that, no, that is not one way out. But the thing is, but it's just so... It's just grown, hasn't it? When I was a girl, there was nothing but the BBC. And life must have been, in some way, so easy for the BBC. But of course, that was before television. So all you had was radio, and radio was the British Broadcasting Corporation. And they had absolutely no competition at all. And then, of course, you began to get the television, and then you got ITV, and now you have all this proliferation of channels. And with a proliferation of channels, no one is going to get incredibly high viewing figures overall, are they? Because, you know, there's just too much out there.
P.D. James sat on the Board of Governors of the BBC. She sits in the House of Lords because she is a baroness. And I made Bill Russell stop for just a moment. We're going to be back in a moment to continue this conversation. Please be with us when we return.